guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Pete in Delaware leads us off this hour. Pete, thanks for hanging on. What do you got on Belichick?
No problem, guys. Hey, yeah, I watched that live. I'm an NFL combine junkie. It got worse after he left. I mean, he got his PR spin. I mean, Dion, Mayock, and Eisen could not just stop glowing about him afterwards. The money, what kind of man he is, and oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, if I'm a Boston media person, I'm hanging myself wondering, who's this guy? But hey, one quick thing. I don't know if you guys got to watch any of it, but did you guys see this Shaquin Griffith, the kid with one hand,
just
doing a big press for
yeah.
the Boston?
Yeah, I saw it.
I just bring that up because, you know, I just thought that was amazing. 20 times at 225 pounds.
It's a great story. He had lost his hand when he was like 4 years old or something.
Yeah.
This guy's a prosthetic and ripped it in the bench press. Is he going to be drafted or not?
That I can't speak to. But I'm
so clueless about this
stuff. His weekend was ridiculous, though. He wanted to apparently get like 5 or 6 reps. He got 20. He had the fastest time for a linebacker.
He can run,
too. That's a great story.
Yeah, he can run, too. They showed him running. He was flying.
Love it.
You know what? I'd take a shot on him.
Hell yeah. I mean, if you're going to have freaking Brandon Bolden on the bottom of your roster covering punts, well, might as well get this kid, you know? Like,
tell
this kid
what,
is a good story.
Well, looking at him, I've never seen him play a game, but I bet you he's better than Kyle Van Noy and Landon Roberts. Like, with their linebacking core, I'd totally take a shot at this guy. I'll take a pass breakup, anything with this guy, anything.
Colin Waltham on Deontay Wilder. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, Mike, you can hear me?
I can hear you.
Mike, so yeah, I watched the fight, and Tony keeps saying in the 7th round that Ortiz knocked Wilder to the floor. Or Wilder never went to the mat. He never got knocked down. In the corner, he tied him up, and he hugged him, and he held on the last 20 seconds. So he never went down. I watched the whole fight. Tony, you're wrong.
No, I now, thought Mike, there was a knockdown. Kingdom,
Ortiz was knocked down earlier, not Wilder.
No, yes, but Wilder never went to the mat, and Tony was saying that. I agree that Ortiz was winning the fight, but then Wilder really turned it on at the end, and he never did go down, Tony. But on the Houston game, the NBA, I think, Mike, you're underrating Houston. I mean, Ryan Anderson didn't play a reason. That team's deep. Eric Gordon had 29 points. They kind of have a mini big three with Gordon, Paul, and Harden. And they won 15 in a row. I just think that team can win it all. I think you're underrating Houston.
They have a ton of talent is what they have. I'm not telling you they're not talented. They're bursting at the seams with talent. I don't think they have any clue how to play the game. And this is typical Mike D'Antoni, you know, chuck and duck stuff. Then they don't play defense. The rebounding, Capella or not, is sketchy. And they have no real offensive approach other than to get it, you know, past the half line and either chuck it from 30 feet or have Harden drive. I mean, what else do they do? And first they should have lost. And the Celts gave it away. But then in the last 30 seconds, when it became free throw, inbound, timeout kind of game, that's the kind of game it became. Foul, timeout, free throw, inbound. Foul, timeout, free throw, inbound. They once again couldn't do it. They couldn't hit their free throws. They screwed up inbounds plays. They had 6 men coming out of the huddle after a full 2-minute timeout where D'Antoni draws up the play. Draws up the play, and 6 guys walk out on the floor. Like, what play did he draw up? And the Celtics still almost tie the thing. When the Celtics, you know, they get into this game where, you know, Paul is the one who gets it. He fouls Irving a couple times, and Irving has to intentionally miss, and he can't do it. You know, for the first one goes in, the second one he misses the rim. So it's like all these the points at the very end of the game where it should have been over. Not even a shot for the Celtics, and they get a shot at the end of the game to tie it and almost do. Because I think the Rockets have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, they might not. I still hate the style of play. I just don't think that style of play can win. Because you're too reliant on one side of the game, and sooner or later, again, you're going to have to win a 93-91 game, and I don't think they can do it.
Brandon in Foxborough on the Bruins. Hi, Brandon.
What's going on, Mike? So these moves that Don Sweeney's made, it just seems right now the guy can't miss, and I don't know if it's just luck or fate, but, you know, Brian Gionta comes in, and, you know, he's 3 assists in his first 3 games, whatever. Nick Holden's doing a flat pass to DeBrusque in the high slot with 2 minutes to tie the game up. But one thing I've noticed a little bit with Gionta, I know he was a pest when he was, you know, younger to play against. He causes a lot of havoc in front of that net.
It's great.
For a little guy. He's in there with the stick. He's kind of like a weasel, too, with the stick. He shoots the puck after the whistle.
Yeah, Brendan, he is a little BC Montreal Canadian rat. That's what he is. Yeah, I mean, that's what the guy is.
And just one thing I wanted to make on McAvoy against Pittsburgh. I know he got absolutely leveled by Hornquist, but later in that shift when I saw him put his shoulder to the center of Hornquist's chest and knocked him down, speaks volumes of what that kid can bring. Does not take any BS on the ice and brings it right back every time.
Oh, he's important. If he's really hurt, they're in trouble. If McAvoy's really, really hurt, they're done. We can debate whether they're a true cup team or not, even with them. But without him, I don't see how they do it. But he's right about Gianta.
He's
Dinkus will stick his nose right in there.
He is. He's a pest. He's a good guy to have, though, particularly in the playoffs, because that's what you're going to get in there. There's a lot of fighting and scrapping.
Again, I
McAvoy will be back in a month.
I hate to keep going here, but there is a downside. I mean, I'm glad they made their moves, and I want them to go on the longest run possible, and I want them to play the best guys. I'm just telling you that if I told you just 2 weeks ago that 40-year-old Brian Gianta, who's not even in the league anymore, he was out of the league all year. He just signed after the Olympics. If 40-year-old Brian Gianta is taking time and shifts away from Danton Heinen in the big games at the end of the year into the playoffs, what would you say? That's not what we want. We want to develop the kids.
Except that given where they are right now, I think there's a variable. And that Heinen wasn't playing great. You know, they don't need the games now. Whether they're second or third, other than home ice, is largely immaterial. And home ice, I don't know how much really matters in the playoffs anyway. I mean, I'd prefer that they have it, don't get me wrong, with the way they've played in their own building. And I still think they're in a spot to get it anyway. So I think that they can pick spots now here. I like the idea of just having extra bodies to rotate guys in and out. What is it? They don't have. They're playing every other day, pretty much the rest of the way.
This is the last time they have 2 days off in a row.
So you know what? Like you can't. If that means that everybody gets a game off every three games or something, so be it. I'm okay with that.
Rocco and Saugus on the fight. Hi, Rocco.
Hey, what's up? Listen, I got a couple points. Right, I heard earlier that people are demanding this fight against the heavyweights, against Claudy and the other guy Wilder, Joshua Claudy. I don't really, honestly, I'm a big boxing fan. I didn't watch the fight Saturday night, but I don't hear anybody demanding this fight, man. I mean, honestly, you saying there's really no action in the lower weight class, like the welterweight, you missed a hell of a knockout fight 2 weeks ago against Rios and Danny Garcia.
I never heard of those guys, Rocco. Never heard of them. Don't care about them. And when I do get talked into a middleweight fight, and again, you don't even call them that anymore. You call them 153, 154, 147. So you don't even call them middleweights anymore. Whenever I get sucked into one of those kind of fights, it's Canelo Alvarez and Golovkin, and no one really gets hurt. And then I can't get entertained by the fight because neither of them I can understand or say anything interesting. So I'm done with that. I'm done with your 154, whatever that is. What is 154? Billy Lanny, fight doctor. What's 154? What is that?
Is that like middleweight?
Is that a welterweight, middleweight? Like, what happened to the weight class?
No idea.
Middleweights are around 160, aren't they?
Weight classes lose track of them.
Thank you. Okay? So I'm done with it. Heavyweights. Boom! There is no weight. Whatever. They're the big fellas, and it doesn't even matter what you weigh. And so I don't even have to worry about what the class is or what the weight is. And the guys actually go down and get hurt. And when you say no one's calling for the fight because no one knows about these heavyweights, and that's the fault of the sport or something. But don't tell me that people in the boxing world aren't calling for it. Again, I was reading Chris Mannix. Chris Mannix, who does the Celtics on NBC Sports Boston, he's also the fight guy. He's also the big he's a big fight guy, and he covers the fights for Yahoo. He says, get this. So, and I think he got the name wrong. The caller did. Is it Anthony Joshua?
Yeah, Anthony Joshua. Yeah,
Anthony Joshua, the Brit, who's also undefeated. Wilder will be ringside for Joshua's title defense as a broadcaster at the end of the month, March 31st. So Joshua's fighting one more time at the end of the month, and if he wins, apparently we're going to get Wilder Joshua. That's the supposition. Wilder's going to be there as a broadcaster, ringside.
Love that.
And as part of the deal, he will have the opportunity to address Joshua post-fight in the ring. So he will have the opportunity to address Joshua post-fight in the ring. Is he going to tell him that his grandma told him that he's the...
Now I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass, baby.
Addressing reporters late Saturday night, Wilder said he was tired of calling out Joshua.
The baby is what makes the cut.
That he's ready for the fight, that he wants the fight. Believe me, writes Mannix, Dante, so do we. Like, the fight will get some traction. It should be getting more. Because this is an entertaining guy. These are entertaining fights. They're big fellas who get hurt. You don't need to worry about what weight class they are or how much they weigh. You don't need to worry about the points or the cards. You don't really. Wilder's fought 40 times, 39 times he's knocked his guy out. So what? Don't worry about the judging or the car. Someone's going down, and they're big guys. and it's fun stuff. And so, you know, I'm into it. Hopefully people get on board and this becomes a thing again. There's no reason why it shouldn't be. There really isn't.
I mean, it's only 3 weeks away. Again, this Joshua Parker fight, they're both unbeaten. And to me, if you ever thought a fight was going to be fixed, this is the one, baby. I put your money on Joshua.
Right, with Wilder sitting there, he's going to jump in the ring after. They're probably going to get nose to nose, some old school hype machine here. And what, Joshua's going to lose?
So I wonder how much time, that, like realistically, I don't know if Billy's back there. How much time would they need to hype this fight? Because if it were me, Thanksgiving weekend.
Mannix said the summer.
Okay, so we're fine. I'd push it to the fall. I say Thanksgiving weekend. Make sure everybody's home on a Saturday night to watch these two giants beat the snot out of each other. That's what I would love to see.
Tugger Mass, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Marcus Morris going to lob it into the front court. Smart. Catches, turns, falls away, and hit the front rim. It's no good, but the Celtics came within an inch of the most miraculous finish you would ever have heard. A Hail Mary to Marcus Smart. He was able to catch it at the three-point line in front of the Boston bench, turn and get a shot away that hit the front rim.
Wow. And I'm not sure if he didn't get fouled in that situation.
Which would have been three free throws. The Celtics and the Rockets have completed one of the most memorable regular season series we have ever seen. The Rockets win their 15th consecutive game. Their NBA best record goes to 49-13.
I mean, to me, overall, by them, it was a good performance. I thought they were going to get blown out in the thing. I mean, really? So, look, they hung in there. I do think, if their bench plays the way it did in that game, and I'm talking specifically about Morris and Monroe, I thought that those two guys were dynamite. Like, if those two guys play like that, and they can pick spots to match up against teams that can't handle those two guys, particularly Monroe.
Wait, so all of a sudden they're going to become an inside team?
No, I'm just saying when the opportunity's there to do it. To do it. It gives them a dimension they didn't have. That's all. That's all I'm saying. A team like Houston, where are they weak? Same place Golden State is. You're going to have to go inside and score in there. If you try to shoot with them, you're going to lose.
How about through the East? Because I don't care.
It makes me more optimistic about their chances in the East.
Oh, see, I came away, as much as I was bummed the way that they gagged it away, I think that's more representative of who they really are. And I felt that kind of way anyway going into the All-Star break. What you were seeing there for the last couple of weeks, you know, going into that was kind of fluky, and they're not that bad. They were just kind of tired or checked out a little bit. What you saw Saturday, they can kind of flip the switch. They can, you know, they're the best team in the East. I think that they proved that.
I said to you on Friday that I thought they were going to, there was a chance they'd get blown out on Saturday night.
Oh, you were crazy.
With the way the game went here, Houston winning 14 in a row, I sort of felt like Houston was pissed off about the way that game ended here. Like, I could see them going in and getting schwacked by 18. I could see that, absolutely.
So it sounds like a green teamer take, but I just think they established who they are, even in the defeat. They gagged at the end. They gagged. No question. They gave the game away. But they go in there and go toe-to-toe with the best team in the league right now.
Yeah.
The hottest team in the league.
And in the regular season, that game had about as much intensity as you could expect.
A legit game.
Yeah. I still think the playoffs go to a different level, but for a regular season game, that one had about as much as you're going to have.
I think you're going to the finals. I think Cleveland is done. Done, done, done. I said it last week. I officially declared him dead last week after they lost at home to Philly. Then they go out and lose at home to Denver, and they're not even really close.
You know, there's even more drama besides the soup-throwing incident.
Which turned out to be chicken tortilla?
Yes, chicken tortilla soup is what J.R. Smith threw at the assistant coach. Something else popped up over the last, like, 48 hours, and that's Jeff Green, who's out with a back injury. Well, he popped up on, I think it was LeBron's Snapchat or Instagram story last night, roller skating with LeBron. Just out there having a time, and apparently some of the Cavaliers brass are like, well, wait a minute, I thought you were hurt. Why can't you play basketball? But you can go roller skating? Huh?
LeBron's done. Just watch any of the clips, man.
They're not done. Cleveland's not done.
Done.
They are not. They might be coasting right now because the games right now don't matter. What are they going to do? They're not going to catch the Celtics either way.
Take a look at the look in LeBron's eye.
It's bad body language, too, man.
Glassed over, done, going through the motions.
Yeah,
it's
so look,
over.
I'm not telling you that Cleveland's winning the East. I just don't think they're done yet. I think you're going to see them play late in the regular season and in the playoffs, and then we'll find out.
Meanwhile,
they might shut it down after that.
Meanwhile, guess who's putting up 25 a night for a team that's won, I think, six straight and is now sniffing at the 8 seed in the West.
Would this be the same Lil guy who is referring to this team as the 2015 Celtics right now? Have you seen this quote?
No, I have not.
Yeah, healthy little peanut. Yeah, we're an up-and-coming team. Watch out, everyone.
It's just good to see that. See, I think you guys have gone too far on Isaiah and are being unfair to him. Like, you were blaming Isaiah for the Cleveland troubles? That's a joke.
Well, with some of the drama.
No, Cleveland is Cleveland. Cleveland is their own drama, their own situation.
Cleveland's all about LeBron. It always has been.
And by the way, Jones said this at the trade deadline. It turns out he was absolutely right. When they traded Isaiah Thomas, they lowered their ceiling. They lowered their ceiling. Because the best they were possibly going to be is if Isaiah comes close to what he was last year and is just sort of, again, that poor man's version of Kyrie. That's where the Cavaliers could have been at their best. You're not going to get that out of Clarkson or Hood. Maybe your floor is higher, but your ceiling is lower. You can't. Your ceiling was only going to be reached if Isaiah returned and went off.
Yeah, but they were never going to be able to coexist. That was proven almost immediately.
All I'm telling you, then figure it out. I'm glad to see that Isaiah landed on his feet. He's succeeding. The Lakers are winning. They're surging. And Cleveland is the same old mess they were before Isaiah even started playing there. It was not about Isaiah then. It's not about Isaiah now.
No, the dysfunction in Cleveland wasn't about Isaiah, but he and LeBron were a bad match from the start.
Apparently so.
And the trade as it
turned out. But who do you blame for that?
LeBron.
LeBron. Oh, LeBron.
Oh, it's always about LeBron there, please. Why is Kyrie not there? LeBron. Because it's always because of LeBron. But you knew the second that deal happened, unless they cut Isaiah, that he was probably going to make the Lakers better. Now he's screwing the Celtics on that draft pick.
Not to listen to these two jamokes over here.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he was going to get playing time there for sure.
He's still coming off the bench, but all of a sudden, that team is caught in fire, and Isaiah Thomas is a big part of it. I mean, he's playing like 30 minutes a night. He's still playing a lot. He's just coming off the bench.
I mean, they're 10 games out now, the top five in the draft lottery.
The L.A.?
Oh, Lakers.
Say goodbye to that pick.
It's gone.
Bye-bye. Pick's gone.
10 games.
Start watching Sacramento next year, which is okay. That still might end up working out for you. It just ain't going to be.
It's top one protected, by the way, that Sacramento Kings pick.
So it's still never going to be one, but it could be up there. You know, you still could be up there. You just got to push it off a year. It's too bad. This year had all
and
those.
And then, Maz, correct me if I'm wrong, but if they don't get the pick from Sacramento next year, doesn't it convey to 2 seconds the next year?
I think something like that.
So you could get porked in this whole deal.
Jimmy, tell me how it doesn't convey with Sacramento, though.
It can't be number one overall.
Okay, but if it's anything other than number one, then you get it.
I'll double check it.
Okay, so you still have a 75, 80% chance or better, even if they're the worst team.
This team has won the lottery one time in their history.
Okay, all I'm saying is, you know, y'all thought it was going to be the Lakers this year. It's not. And Isaiah's helping to ruin that. And it turns out, Isaiah wasn't the problem in Cleveland.
No, he was. There's no ball-dominant player as far as a shooter goes in Los Angeles. Lonzo Ball, please.
Okay. He's coming off the bench.
Yeah, I know.
Jimmy. Isaiah was not the problem in Cleveland.
He was.
Because their record is even worse now without him. It's just as bad. It's just as bad, if not worse. It's the same issues. It's LeBron. Phone's here before the update. Robert in Marble. Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, how's it going, boy?
It's going good. What do you got?
So I'm watching the Bruins this weekend. I'm thinking back to you talking last week about Lindgren and all these potential picks coming in. And what we got in return is, you know, Nash. And you see Holden on Saturday night taking that shot through the slot, ends up in the back of the net, and that's what the Bruins need. They need that offense that gets moved to the puck, to the front of the net, score some goals, and that's always been an issue. But I'm thinking about the Belichick at the combine today, and that's not uncommon to the guy. After the Super Bowl last year, he's going up to Chris Berman, talking, saying hello, giving him hugs, kissing his ass.
He's always been Berman's guy. He's always been Berman's guy. This thing today was a tongue bath. This thing today was a undercarriage washing like you haven't seen in front. And I think Bill's just turning it on nationally.
And the other way is, what better way to avoid Malcolm Butler questions than to start making the conversation about the broadcasters? You totally snow them, and in the process, you never have to answer it.
Oh, you guys are great. You do great work. Oh, that Dion, that's great TV on Mondays with this, and he hands eyes and a check, which, again, I'm not – that's good. That's a good thing. I'm just telling you, he was playing nice doesn't do it justice what Bill was doing today with those NFL Network people. So, again, I'm telling you, Rich Eisen is the lead NFL Network anchor. The next time Rich Eisen is anchoring a segment on Malcolm Butler and what Belichick did in the Super Bowl, how do you think Rich Eisen's going to treat that segment? Bill just handed him a fat check for his charity. Is Rich Eisen going to turn around and rip Bill Belichick ever again? If anyone does it on his panel, how much room is Rich Eisen going to give that guy? I mean, it's smart on the part of Bill. I'm just telling you, that's what I think is going on there. He's playing the game, which Bill is not above doing. Dan in New Hampshire has been holding for the Wilder fight. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, guys. I felt like I couldn't agree with you more about boxing needing Wilder. Boxing right now is taking a page out of the Bellator with the next boxer doing the actual commentary, which is pretty cool. And as far as Felger, you talking about, you know, it being fixed. When I was a kid, I used to listen to the Spanish guys to see if they used to curse. Well, if you listen in between the seventh and eighth round, Ortiz's coach was telling him that the guy's going to come out like a maniac to stand back, let him tire himself out. So I don't believe that it's a fixed fight, but I do believe that we need something like this.
Or bad coaching is what you think it was. Of course you need something like this. I mean, these Wilder fights, I've watched the last couple. This is the first time in boxing where I've been told maybe you should watch something, and I watch it, and I actually enjoy it. And I actually say, that was worth it. I got told, I mean, even just going back, the last, was it Mayweather, De La Hoya? Like, there were a couple big ones there. Snooze fest. It was just a Mayweather problem. But again, no, I tried Canelo Alvarez and Triple G, snooze fest. I did enjoy Mayweather, Conor McGregor, mostly because of McGregor and the unknown. I just thought it was, at least they got hit a little bit. But these Wilder fights on Saturday night, like, I was like, this is great.
Well, he is. This guy's a wild card.
They hurt each other. They hit the deck. It was a little dangerous. It was a little sloppy. The guy talked some tremendous smack in the ring afterwards. I'm like, perfect. Why, this is, it's such an easy product to deliver.
Well, this guy's not in there to box. Because he can't. He's just in there to knock someone's head off. I mean, he sits there and waits for the opportunity to absolutely club someone. And he's true. The caller's right. There was that conversation there in the corner between the seventh and eighth. But once Wilder was, once you got a look at him, you're telling me you couldn't discern the fact that he was loopy? I was stunned. The other thing is, I don't put it past them to say, make sure the world knows that we're backing off because we're respecting Wilder. Please. Like, I smell a rat there. I don't know. Something went down. Maybe not. I mean, how the hell do I know? But I look at it and say, you've got the guy beat. He's glassy-eyed, for crying out loud. He came out, he was still wobbly. And he just let him recover. Stunning to me that he let that happen.
Hey, we've got the Celtics meltdown on Saturday night in Houston. And again, Al Horford right back center stage. We'll discuss him right after this. Right after Murray's update, tells you the latest here on Charlie McAvoy.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Kyrie, left-hand dribble on Harden, gets past him, switches to the right hand, scoops it up, thought it was going, but the rim spit it out. Harden, skip pass into the corner for a three for P.J. Tucker.
That's a big swing.
Back iron, rebound, Rozier. Rozier, though, stripped of the ball by P.J. Tucker. Chris Paul comes out with it, finds Ariza for a three that ties the game. Kyrie bounce pass, picked off by Ariza. Ariza goes the length of the floor and scores to put the Rockets ahead. Timeout, Brad Stevens.
Wow.
Horford catches, open three, no good, golden opportunity. And Al Horford just can't shake this slump right now. Rozier puts it to the floor, throws out to Horford, up fakes the three, drives in traffic, turns his body, floats it up, no good. Rebound, Houston, Capella had it, ripped away by Horford, loose ball on the floor, Ariza has got it.
You played a great game. You've gotten right to that point, and you just made mistakes at the very end.
Turnovers were even. Then the Celtics committed the final two. And the points off turnovers, this is going to be the difference. Kyrie tries to miss it. And he ended up making it. He tried to bank it, and it circled the rim and fell in.
All right, so there's the Celtics meltdown. How much you put on Al Horford there, Jim Murray? What was his plus-minus in that game?
Minus 22 for the night is what he was.
And he was minus 8 in the fourth quarter.
Okay, do they have an Al Horford problem?
Yeah, they have since the All-Star break. I think that that's fair to say. He's looked slow. He's looked old. It's not even, I don't even need, I've gotten over the Al should be putting up 15 a night. I just need better defense. He looks like he has cement legs and has for a month, even going back before the All-Star break. Like, that's the one thing that's bugged me. And there was one of those last possessions that Harden just blew right past him. Like, my God, at least put a body on him. Can you do at least that, even if you've got to draw a foul? Like, come on. He has been brutal. And it's back to the magician. It really is. Like, boo, disappearing in these big games like he did on Saturday night. And he's been maybe the worst player in the league, the worst big-name player in the league since they've come back from the All-Star break.
See, my bigger issue with him is on the offensive end, believe it or not. Because I just think he's such a big part of their offense. You know, in a half, now maybe in a game like this it doesn't show up, but he missed some shots he should make. You know, turnovers, like just all of it. I look at it and say, now instinctively you would almost say, maybe there's an injury. But you know what? If he had an injury, they wouldn't play him. I mean, look at how they handle Kyrie, right? Any of these guys is the littlest thing because they know they're going to need the particularly the older players, the veteran players that they have. They know they're going to need him in the spring. They would back him off if they had to. So I just think he's right now he sucks. I'm not saying it's staying that way, but he played like garbage on Saturday night.
I mean, here's what I think the issue is: he's a borderline star. You know, he's kind of a.
Don't say that, Mike. No, you don't see the little things with this player.
He's a BB plus player.
No, he's a really, really good role player. Even though he starts and gets a ton of minutes, I still consider him more like when you need a big three, you need a one, a two, and a three. He's a
three-ish.
He's a low three, right? I mean, he's a third. If you're Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Al Horford, he can be the third. But he's not a third in every scenario. I mean, you know what I mean? So he's he's like a three plus. He's a 3A. And so that's just what it is. Like, you know, he was, for the first half of the year, first quarter of the year, he was great. He and Irving together were great. But Waters is going to seek its level there at some point. He's just going to be what he is, which is a really, really good role player, but he's really not more than that.
I just think he's a classic guy that he's got to be matched up against the right person. If he's up against a big guy, a traditional big guy, he can pull him away from the basket and make shots. Because he can't go, but if he's up against a more athletic guy, he can't score on the interior and he can't play on the outside. So this is part of what the problem was, I think, Saturday night, is that they were able to use, even Baines, when they got Baines the ball down by the basket, the little bit that he was in there overall, he gave him something, I thought. There was value there. Horford, nothing. Nothing. I didn't think they should have put him back in the game when they did halfway through the fourth quarter. Now, I get it. I mean, he's their guy. They're going to go with their guy. So, you know, it's not the worst decision in the world, but Monroe was playing better than Horford was.
Okay, Reentry Monday. Everything on the board, including this. This is something Maz wanted to get to, so I will jump Stanley in line because Maz has a thought on it as well. Stanley in Weymouth, what do you want to talk about?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Good.
I wanted to talk about Kirk Cousins. I'm actually a Jets fan, and I was wondering what you guys actually think, because I'm actually surprised that the Jets are one of the two teams that he's picking or deciding between. And then to draft Saquon Barkley and have a running back and a quarterback.
Well, that would be typical Jets. Let's draft a running back first overall. That would be smart. I want to see who's the dum-dum that drafts him in the top five. What dumb team is going to draft a running back in the top five?
Probably like one of those dumb teams like the Rams that took Todd Gurley or the Cowboys
lost in the
who
first
took
round,
Ezekiel
who still
Elliott.
Haven't won a playoff game. Well, yeah, keep going.
They don't, like, those guys don't matter to their offense,
not,
though.
Well, not, it, no, they do. That's the problem. They do. No, they do matter to their offense, and that's why those teams don't go anywhere. That's why neither of them won a playoff game with your great running backs. You can retort.
No, because I know we're never going to agree with it.
Well,
I'm right.
No,
it's turned that running backs actually do matter. They've been selecting them in the first round, and they are going to help these teams.
No,
the
no.
Rams are on the upswing.
Teams
the Cowboys,
are,
even though on a down year, because Elliott got suspended, will be on an upswing. Whoever picks Barkley is going to get themselves a stud.
Just tell me the next time a best offensive player wins a Super Bowl. Just tell me the next team to win the Super Bowl that has their best offensive player is a running back. Just tell me. Just let me know who that is. Or even get there. Nowadays, or even win an effing playoff game. Nowadays, the teams you just mentioned have never haven't won a playoff game with those.
Seattle the year they had Marshawn Lynch?
I don't know. I think everything changed there when they got Russell Wilson. Call me crazy. I mean, it did. Russell Wilson got there and they started going to Super Bowls.
Playing devil's advocate.
I know you're reaching. You're trying.
I'm trying.
There's no, because you can't. This is stupid. This is the Jets or the Browns. This or someone. Someone will be stupid enough to draft this little running. Is he small?
I don't know what his size is.
The running back from Penn State there. That would be just so typical Jets. But I'm sorry. Maz has a big problem with Kirk Cousins. He'll give you his problem with Kirk Cousins when we come back right after this in our long commercial-free segment.
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Maz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
And now Nash will break it out over the line right side. Charlie McAvoy a little slow to get back to the bench as it's floated on the Canadian's net, covered by Antti Niemi.
Charlie McAvoy favoring his left leg as he really struggled to get to the bench, and they're taking him down towards the Bruins locker room. You know, when you see injuries like that, think about Steven Stamkos last year. You know, he went into the boards just awkwardly, and it wasn't much at all, and all of a sudden he's missing the rest of the season. I mean,
lower body, obviously didn't return. Tomorrow's a scheduled day off, so everyone will be off, and Monday when we get back to the rink, we'll have a better idea where he's at. So right now, that's all I got. Hopefully it's not serious. It didn't look serious at the time, but I don't really know. I have nothing new to report. He's getting evaluated this afternoon. Will not play tomorrow. And then we'll go from there.
You don't think they know what's wrong by now? Like, of course they know.
Oh, no, they had it diagnosed within minutes, for crying out loud.
I mean, if it's an ACL, you can tell right there. The doctor can tell right there with an examination, just feeling the knee, if it's an ACL. So they don't even need to take a picture. So they can tell an ACL immediately. And it's now been almost 48 hours. So they know. They know exactly what it is. So Cassie's not giving it up in front of the microphone, which is fine. That's easy. Belichick does that. But behind the scenes, not one drib, not one drab, not one leak, not Dreger, not Bob McKenzie, not Elliot Freeman, not Eklund, not Fluto Shinzawa, Steve Conroy, Joe Haggerty, or Joe McDonald. No one local, DuPont, no one national, nothing. Not a sniff. And you watch the way the Patriots news has been disseminated the last couple of years? Boy, everything is doled out to a media guy. Everything. There is hardly a piece of Patriots news anymore that happens where it's the team is the one that announce it. It's almost always Schefter or Rappaport sometimes, or rarely but sometimes someone locally. But usually it's a national guy who gets it first, and then it's announced by the team or the league. Yeah, almost every piece of news. And even on the injury stuff, we know. Don't you feel like we know about injuries now more than we ever did with the Patriots?
Sure.
It comes out now. It comes out. We knew about... How many different reports were there on Brady's thumb? And I understand Tom Brady's different than Charlie McAvoy, but still. Like, there's leaks all over the place. The Bruins? Not a clue.
No, Zippo. They clearly have been, pretty locked down.
Well, But either way,
even the trade stuff, like some of the rumors that you hear out there, who had Rick Nash on the radar?
The night before, there was a groundswell for Rick Nash.
Okay, but again, but the point is that we didn't know 2 weeks before that they were targeting Nash.
And it was also coming from the New York side. The actual trade was announced by the Bruins Twitter feed. It wasn't like Darren Dreger came out and said, Bruins have traded for Charlie McAvoy, and then the team announces it. No, the team announced the trade. There were rumblings the night before, but I get the sense that was pretty much all on the New York side. They're pretty tight down there with the Bruins, which I think is a sign of a good operation. Like, it sort of starts there. So I think that's okay. I also think they might have dodged a bullet now with McAvoy. The more that goes on, I mean, if he tore his ACL, they know right then and there. And they know by now, and there's no reason to string anyone along or play the game or try and fake which leg it is if that's what they're doing. They would just say he's done for the year. So I'm the more that goes on here, the more I'm led to believe it's something less than an ACL, and he should be back at some point.
So the only variable to me now is that what if it's something that's sort of gray? In other words, it could be done, but we don't know. We just got to wait it out for a while and see how it heals.
Well, then, because there's another thing sometimes that happens with ACLs is they have to wait for all the swelling to go down. And if it's, we think it is, but we can't tell for sure because they either have to wait for the swelling to go down to take a picture or something. Like, I've heard that in the past, too, that there's a swelling issue sometimes that you have to wait for it to subside before you get a clear look. So I don't know. But that's it on Charlie McAvoy and the Bruins. Back to your phones. Here is Eugene in Dorchester on Al Horford. Hi, Eugene.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to comment on Al Horford. You know, I think that he's done a great job. You know, and he didn't have a particularly good game, you know, in the Celtics' last loss to Houston. But you can't, you know, evaluate a guy on just one bad game. What he has meant to the Celtics has just been monumental. The Celtics are the fifth youngest team in the NBA. And when you have a young team like that, it's important to have pros like Al Horford that does things the right way, show young players how to win the right way. And, you know, initially...
Well, nobody disputes any of that. He's playing like garbage right now. Fact!
Yeah, it wasn't just one game. Since the All-Star break, he's averaging like 7 points and five rebounds. He's been brutal.
So again, like, you know, I'm not telling you they should cut his ass tomorrow and be done with him. No one is saying that. He's playing like garbage right now. Fact. Yeah, they'd have been better off leaving Greg Monroe in the game the other night.
And the call is talking about, you know, he has some great intangibles. He does. Al Horford has great intangibles. Max guy, big three, like that's not an intangible guy. That's got to be a pure talent and, you know, take over a game kind of guy. And he's not. He's just not. So he's your second most important player. He's your number two right now, and he's miscast as that. And if, you know, that's going to show, and I think that's what's happening. Zach in New Hampshire. Go, Zach.
Hey, I'm calling about Al Horford. I think his concussion or something with his head, like he's still messed up a little. It looks like he's going in slow motion out there. I mean, when he was diving on the ball, he looked like one of the paranoid fifth grader just throw the ball over his head to get rid of it. He doesn't want to touch it. So it might be a concussion that's going on with him or something, that lingering concussion or something.
Okay, do we think Al Horford might be banged up, Murray?
Yeah, maybe. He's had concussion issues before. Like, he's only 31. Like, it's not like he got old overnight. So maybe there's some residual thing there going on with him because he's looked too slow, especially defensively. Like, you know, Matt said earlier, he would rather, you know, Horford have better offensive numbers right now. Me, it's the defense that's driven me nuts for like a month.
Jimmy Stewart, you think Al Horford might be hurt?
No, I don't think he's hurt. I think he's showing his age right now.
Scary.
This actually happened last year, but it went under the radar. And this is actually more of the reason why they went with Greg Monroe rather than wait for a wing score to hit the market.
Okay, well, so if they're relying on Greg Monroe, then you must be scared crapless there, Stu, because you think Greg Monroe's
a hack. Well,
it was more
to manage down the stretch of the regular season, but yes, Greg Monroe is a hack.
Okay, so this is not a good thing.
Nope.
If Greg Monroe is a
why you need T-shirt guy.
Over Al Horford. T-shirt guy, the German kid?
Daniel Tice. Yes.
Come on. Give me a break. Here's Raul and Haverhill on the Wilder fight. Hi, Raul.
He's Horford light.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, Maz, I think you hit the nail on the coffin when you said that that Deontay Wilder does not have a style because his best defense is his offense, which makes it fun. I'm sick of seeing these Brit fighters and these Russian fighters being so nice on the microphone. Max Kellerman asked them, who do you want to fight next? And they say, oh, I want to take some time with my family. I want to thank God. I want to speak to my promoters. None of that. Deontay Wilder gets to the point, calls out Anthony Joshua, and he has been calling him, and it's been great to see finally USA stand up.
It's fun. Wilder's fun. I don't know if he's a great boxer. He's probably not, but he puts guys on their ass. He'll tell you.
My grandma told me a long time ago I was anointed by God, and it shows each and every time.
His grandma told him he was anointed by God.
Maybe this just speaks to the fact that boxing is overall dead, at least to a casual fan, because this guy should be promoted. He should be more of a household name.
I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass, baby.
The way you guys have talked about it, and even the clips we've shown, it looked like it was an entertaining fight. He sounds very entertaining. Even when you talked about him a couple of months ago, I was like, okay, I should know about this guy. I should know when the next fight's coming. The fight happened, I didn't even know.
And the whole storyline. He's fought 40 times, 39 knockouts. No one's ever done that in the heavyweight division. No one. No one. Not Tyson. Not Ali. Not Frazier. Not anyone. No one. Holyfield. No one. No one's ever done that. He's American. There's a Brit who's 20-0 with 20 knockouts. Who knows how to box. And I don't know if Wilder does. But either way, it'd be a good clash of styles. They've been circling each other. They won't fight each other. Now they're getting closer to fighting each other. And it just is like an automatic no-brainer sort of promotion that... It doesn't take much to get me interested in boxing. You know, just have an entertaining personality.
Guarantee me violence.
And give me someone who's going to get hurt and hit the canvas. I don't need to see points. I don't want to go to the judges. I don't need any of that crap. And with these heavyweights, guys get hurt and they go down. John in Boston, go. Your thoughts.
Two quick points. I'll let you guys talk. I agree with you, Felger. Wilder is good for boxing, but he's great for American boxing. Because part of the problem is that the Klitschko's brought those titles overseas in Europe, and they've been putting on sleep fests ever since. These guys really haven't fought. And my second point is there's too many titles in boxing. That's why I heard you mention you don't like the welter and the middleweight classes, because they got the IBF, the OBA, every letter of the
No question. No question. It's too confusing. And they don't even use the old weight classes of middleweight, which I got, and light heavyweight, which there's only a few of them, and they were words and not numbers. Now it's like at 154. They're fighting at 147. Like, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. And that's tiny anyway. Heavyweight division. It doesn't matter how much they weigh. Just the biggest of the big. You can't go over. And eventually they're going to all be one. There's going to be one heavyweight champion of the world. I'm a simple person, Maz. That's what I need.
I mean, that's what we're heading toward now. You know, if Joshua wins this fight at the end of the month in England, it's in Wales, I think, against this guy Parker from New Zealand, who's also unbeaten. Joshua wins it, you get what you want. You get the two titans going at it. 6'7 American and 6'6 Brit.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati.